The title of today's sermon is Trick or Treat. I'd like you to begin by going to Revelation chapter 18, brethren. How has our nation come to the point of such moral and financial bankruptcy that we find ourselves in today? Did it just happen, or is there a cause and an effect that has gone unseen because of a great deception? God makes a very strong statement at the end of Revelation 18 and verse 23, where we read, "For by your sorceries were all nations deceived." For by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. Brethren, I'd like to throw out some definitions as we begin this sermon today. First of all, I'd like to give you the definition for sorceries, as we see here in Revelation 18:23. It's referring to the use of evil supernatural power. We would call it witchcraft. The definition of omens, or evil omens. An evil omen is a phenomenon or an occurrence regarded as a sign of future disaster. Let me give you the definition of what a zombie is. A zombie is a corpse said to be revived by witchcraft. Do you know what a seance is? A seance is a meeting of mediums who contact spirits of the dead. And let me give you the definition of a ghoul, G-H-O-U-L, a ghoul. It's an evil spirit or phantom, especially one supposed to rob graves and feed on dead bodies. And one last definition, brethren, has to do with the occult. We'll be talking about the occult quite a bit today. The occult has to do with relating to or dealing with evil supernatural influences, agencies, and phenomena. It's dabbling with the things of the spirit world that are beyond the realm of human comprehension, the mysterious, the hidden from view, the concealed. In this week's countdown to the return of Jesus Christ, I did something that I don't normally do. I wrote a satire on trick or treat. Let me start off with the treat. The treat is that everyone will receive affordable health care. The trick is that it will never be funded. There is no possible way a shrinking labor force can fund an ever-expanding group of eligible recipients. Wait, there is a way. We can just keep borrowing and borrowing. Brethren, we hit the $17 trillion debt mark today. What difference does it make? We'll just double that debt to $34 trillion over the next few years. After all, those are just numbers that the House and the Senate members have shown that they lacked the character to address. The treat is that we can just print money right into prosperity. Look at how the stock market is shooting skyward like there's no tomorrow. The trick is that something might go wrong. But what could possibly go wrong? All the possible safeguards have been built in to provide coverage for all low-income Americans and all arriving non-Americans as well. The new law requires that most employers, those who are unable to get waivers, will provide coverage for their employees. The government has provided a central health insurance exchange where the public can compare prices and rates, and that's working. We saw where a woman in Delaware has signed up already this week. There are a few little glitches, as were expected at the beginning of this very compassionate program, like a huge surge of full-time employees being cut to part-time status and 90 million unemployed workers. It's expected that there will be some malcontents. That's what the new internment camps are for. We've used them before. Brethren, what does the state of our nation, as I have just described, have to do with Halloween? Could there possibly be a connection between the fundamental meaning of Halloween and the great deception that has led our country to the point of no return? In today's sermon, we are going to tie the two together because God says, "For by their sorceries were all nations deceived." Halloween is a godless custom that is based on the same principles that Washington, D.C. is following in its relentless pursuit of the destruction of America. We tend to relegate Halloween into a category of those things that just aren't that important. Halloween is very attractive to the youth, and it's also attractive to the uninformed. those who still fully expect something for nothing. In fact, they're beginning to come to the point where they expect everything for nothing. Let's focus on the deception that God warns us of. For by your sorceries were all the nations deceived. There is an occult, sinister, dark side to Halloween that few people today suspect or know anything about. We have been lulled into saying, what's the big deal with Halloween? What does it hurt? Isn't it a good social interaction for the kids? Think about this, brethren. Trick-or-treat is supposed to be a harmless custom of teasing and frolicking. So why then all the symbols of death, ghosts, and witches? A witch is a woman with evil magical powers. Little children are taught to go up to a neighbor's door and say, trick-or-treat! What they're saying is, give me a treat. And it's only subtly implied, or I'll play a trick on you. The very origin of the trick-or-treat tradition is based on the concept of extortion, by unlawfully demanding and obtaining something through the use of force, or the threat of infliction of some damage, or pain, or suffering. Today's adherents of Halloween say that they would never stoop to making victims of their benefactors. Of course not. But the thought is there, under the surface. That is what is being said. And not surprisingly, our nation has crossed the threshold of expecting treats to be given to them. We know it is the entitlement ruling class. They have come to political prominence. They can vote their people in. They can vote their treats without end. And so this world embraces a celebration that foolishly has for its theme goblins, skeletons, and frightening masks for tender little children. And think back, when a month earlier, society has totally rejected a celebration that has to do with peace and joy and happiness and safety for little children, the Feast of Tabernacles. How is it that the world came to reject the beautiful and accept the ugly? How has the world come to accept and to revel in such a strange and bizarre custom as Halloween, depicting for the most part death? Think about it. On one hand, there's a celebration of death and darkness and all things fearful and vile like demons and the devil. And on the other hand, we have the Feast of Tabernacles depicting peace and happiness and security and safety and life and light and plenty, celebrating and praising God. The world's upside down, just like Washington, D.C. is upside down. And now it's time to pay the piper. Our nation was founded on godly principles like freedom, justice, liberty, constitutional law, honesty, all things that make for a good society. But now they have been replaced with greed and jealousy and dishonesty and things that destroy a nation. Those are the fruit of the sorcery that God speaks of. On Halloween Day in 1987, I gave this message in Pasadena, California. For those of you who might have missed it, I have rewritten it, and I'm repeating it again today. Seriously, a great deal has changed in these ensuing 26 years. October the 31st will mark what the world calls Halloween. For many kids, it's the time of costumes and trick-or-treat. As alluring as the world thinks Halloween is, I find it, brethren, a rather unpleasant topic to speak on, and yet the Bible is full of information on what is taking place. I find it necessary to speak on this subject because there is a rapid growing fascination with and enamorment with the entire Halloween genre. Children are absorbed by it, and adults are enthralled. We need to know the motivation and spirit behind Halloween. Halloween is utterly pagan. There's no doubt about it. Is it harmless, meaningless, fun and games? No. It is dangerous and destructive. Celebrating pagan practices like Halloween as harmless fun is opening our minds, open our hearts to Satan's influences. And it's making light of God's multiple, manifold warnings. If we observe pagan customs, it certainly makes a great deal of difference to God. The movies today are filled with massacres and witchcraft, and television programs are promoting witchcraft to millions of people. Obsession with the occult, things of demons and witches, is endemic in our society. From scary movies to Harry Potter to zombie TV series, It's a growing mania. Even TV news today spends an inordinate amount of time covering every lurid detail of the most bizarre of crimes as they come to trial. The kinds of crime that we didn't hear about in the past. Halloween is not harmless fun. God says that we are not to be observing such days or participating in their celebrations. This evil holiday has as its root satanic practices. It shouldn't be any part of a Christian's life. In God's church, we have been taught not to have anything to do with these worldly customs. But why not? First of all, Jesus and the disciples in the early church, they never observed Halloween or anything remotely like Halloween. What's the big deal? Does it hurt? Halloween is not one of God's feasts or Christian practices. Satan is the driving force behind Halloween. And we learned at Atonement that God places all the blame squarely on his head. Some people like scary themes. They like scary movies. They like horror stories and celebrations like Halloween. Brethren, I made up my mind when I was a young man in my 20s not to go to any scary movies. After all, real life can be scary enough when you do not know that God is our protector. Thankfully, we know that. Jesus teaches us that one of the things that we should pray for often is protection from the evil one. That includes Satan's and his host of demons. Jesus had nothing to do with demons except to turn to God and cast the demons out. In Luke chapter 11 and verse 4, we read, "Forgive us our sins as we forgive everyone that is indebted to us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one," as it should properly read. Deliver us from the evil one, from Satan and from the demons. That's our prayer to God. You be our hedge of protection. In this world, we do encounter evil spirits and their agents. In John 17 and verse 15, we read, "I pray not that you should take them out of the world," speaking about the disciples and taking us out of the world, "but that you should keep them, protect them from the evil one." So that's the ardent prayer of Jesus Christ. It's our prayer as well. Protect us from the evil one. And yet the world rejects hands down God's beautiful plan and accepts the God of this world. It's painfully obvious who the author of Halloween is. It's Satan. Brethren, God instructs us to observe the Feast of Tabernacles in the seventh month. That's in Leviticus 23 and verse 34. God wants us to keep that feast. God allowed the nation of Israel to split into two parts after the death of Solomon because of Solomon's idolatry. That's a terrible thing. You think about America splitting apart, falling apart, ceasing to exist. Brethren, that is where we are headed. It happened to ancient Israel. They went into captivity again and again. And here we see the nation splitting. Turn over to 1 Kings 12. We're going to look at Jeroboam. 1 Kings 12 in verse 26. "And Jeroboam said in his heart, now shall the kingdom return to the house of David." What he saw was that when feast time came, everybody in the northern 10 tribes, they would go down to Jerusalem to keep the feast, and there would be unity among the people of God. He didn't want that. And so what did he do? He wanted the 10 tribes to remain separate, not go down to the feast at Jerusalem. Verse 32, "And Jeroboam ordained a feast in the eighth month." Now think about when the eighth month is, brethren. That's just about now. That's about the time that we find Halloween. God didn't say have a feast in the eighth month. It's ordained of man. Jeroboam ordained the feast in the eighth month, not God. This man-made feast came the month after God's true feast. Verse 33, 1 Kings 12 and verse 33. "So he offered upon the altar which he had made in Bethel the 15th day of the eighth month, even the month which he had devised of his own heart." And so he had this feast of the children of Israel. And so Israel began to celebrate sort of a harvest feast a month later than when God said to keep the feast. This festive feast is the eighth month. It's exactly what Halloween is based on. Right here in my neighborhood, brethren, in recent years, many people have been decorating their yards as cemeteries and making the houses look as creepy and spooky as they possibly can. And now churches have Halloween parties and get-togethers, and they even have haunted houses for fundraising projects. Let's go over to Isaiah 65, brethren. Have you ever noticed the proliferation of cemeteries around Catholic churches? Why is it when you find an old Catholic church, you can hardly get through the courtyard because of all the monuments and tombstones and all of these sepulchers and those kind of things that they have around Catholic churches, all of these graves. Notice what it says in Isaiah 65 in verse 2. God says, I have spread out my hands all the day long unto a rebellious people which walk in the way that was not good, after their own thoughts, as we just saw with Jeroboam. He devised it of his own heart. Verse 3, a people that provoke me to anger continually to my face, that sacrifice in gardens and burn incense upon altars of brick. We see this inordinate obsession with the dead, with bones and graves and headstones. Where does that come from? Not from God. It's demonic. Verse 4, which remain among the graves and lodge in the monuments. These are tombstones, headstones. The earliest references to Halloween that we can find, going back saying, what is the origin of Halloween? It speaks of bonfires, ostensibly to ward off ghosts and witches that meander around, wandering about, seeking the souls of evil men. Bonfires were deemed by the ancients to have protective and cleansing powers. When I was a young Catholic seminarian, brethren, bonfires were a large part of our revelry. Little did I know that that word bonfires was short for bone fires, a reference to human sacrifices. It has a long, ugly history, brethren. The belief was that evil spirits could be placated and pacified with gifts, with treats, no less, of fruits and sweets. The Catholics have a feast called All Saints' Day, when their immortal souls of the dead are to be honored. That's November the 1st, and Halloween is the evening and the night before. It's All Holy Evening, All Hallows Evening, or Halloween. That's where the name comes from. But there's this preoccupation with death and horror that has always been associated with this grotesque occasion. There's nothing pretty about it. Decorated as you will, it's terrible. The modern Halloween custom derives from a combination of a practice of the ancient Druids over in England and a similar custom that the Romans had. The Romans had this festival of gathering apples and nuts for winter storage. And of course, the Roman Catholic Church always liked to merge their Christian holidays with pagan holidays, and so just inculcate the pagans right into their Christianity, quote unquote. What is this fascination with the demonic spirit world all about? There has been such an increase recently in the allure of the occult. There's no festival that has so corrupted the American mind than that of Halloween. There's an absorption that is becoming fanatical. It has influenced and corrupted Hollywood to the point where one of the most popular TV series is based on ghouls walking among us. People have this intense and widely shared enthusiasm for the Halloween craze. It's totally without rational basis, and they don't even wonder why there is so great of an appeal and an acceptance of such nonsense. The celebration of Halloween and the practice of its symbols, its symbolism, legitimizes the dabbling with and the recognition of the occult. When people say, Halloween is harmless, I know better, it's just fun, I really don't deal with demons, but I'll just go along with this. What they are doing is they are legitimizing this dabbling, this recognition of demonic forces. It brings the dark side of the spirit world right into everyday life. And by so doing, it causes a grave boundary into the evil side of the spirit world to be crossed and to be penetrated. It is welcoming the demonic world right into our world. It's a horrible, sick, terrible thing. Is there anything wrong being involved in these practices? Yes, God takes a clear position on this subject, strongly denouncing these practices. It's not immediately recognized by those in the world, but this fascination with the occult ultimately is the source and the motivation for the dismemberment movies that there's been such a profligation about, the mass shootings, the disappearance and kidnapping of a great many young women that are never seen again, gang-related crimes too brutal to describe. That comes from this. It is the ultimate enactment of those brutal crimes which have robbed America of its peace of mind. Who is safe today? Who can walk the streets today? We've been robbed of safety, making us subject to vile predators who indulge themselves in the occult. We have been robbed. America is no longer the peaceful, safe nation that it once was. It's no longer safe for little children to walk to school or to play in the park. It's no longer safe for a young lady to be traveling alone. No longer are our schools safe from predators. Our world has changed, and it's changing rapidly, and it's getting worse. Should we simply go along with the crowd and celebrate this popular holiday of Halloween? Innocent fun, parties, decorations, good entertainment for kids. No, the fascination with the occult and the demon world continue to grow. Brethren, all, absolutely everything that is known of the spirit world is what is revealed to us in the Bible. That's the only place that we can know the truth. Not one word, not one syllable of what is on TV or the movies or these computer video games is factual. Remember that, because the spirit world cannot be perceived by men's five senses. Let's go over to Daniel chapter 10. We're going to look at some of the stories that God gives us in the scriptures that shows us that there is a spirit world of good angels and a spirit demonic world. They exist side by side, unseen by us. There was a good angel that was sent to Daniel by God. And we can learn a little bit in this little short set of verses. Daniel 5 and verse 10. Daniel says, "Then I lifted up my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man," this is an angel, "clothed in linen, whose loins were girded with fine gold of Uphaz. His body was like the beryl, and his face was as the appearance of lightning, and his eyes were as lamps of fire, and his arms and his feet in color to polished brass, and the voice of his words like the voice of a multitude." Verse 7. "And I, Daniel, alone saw this vision." Nobody else saw it. Daniel 12 in verse 1. Michael is called the great prince, which stands for the children of the people of God. He's the most powerful angel for Israel. But continuing in Daniel 10, verse 12, "Then said he unto me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you did set your heart to understand and to chasten yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I am come for your words." So Daniel prayed this very profound prayer, beseeching God for some answers. The angel came to Daniel in response to Daniel's petition to God in prayer. But we're also given insight into the goings-on of the unseen spirit world. We're privileged to see an interaction between the good and the bad angels. God shows us some things here. This angel who came to Daniel could not get through the demonic barricade without the help of the archangel Michael. Michael's called an archangel in Jude, verse 9. We'll continue in Daniel 10 and verse 13. "But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me," says this angel, 21 days. "But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me." So this angel that's talking to Daniel couldn't even get through this demonic barricade until the archangel Michael came to intercede and help him break through the barricade. "He came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia." See, he was unable to move on without the help from Michael. This prince of the kingdom of Persia was one of these mighty principalities or demons. He's a fallen angel working under the direction of Satan. Verse 14. Now this good angel says, "Now I am come to make you understand what shall befall your people in the latter days, for yet the vision is for many days." It's for the future. What we're witnessing here, brethren, is a clash of the titans. These are the five-star generals of the spirit world. These are principalities and powers of the angelic world who direct the affairs of nations, at God's direction, of course. We read in Ephesians 6 and verse 12 that we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against, and Paul writes it this way, principalities and powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, spiritual wickedness in high places. So that is what this angel that came to see Daniel was describing. And maybe indeed this might be where Paul came to understand some of it. We can't see the angels. Let's go over to 2 Kings chapter 6 and verse 13. I want to show you a beautiful story that we're given in the Old Testament that show us that there is a tremendous spirit world, both good, two-thirds of the angels, and evil, one-third of the angels. In 2 Kings 6 and verse 13, we read, "And he," now that's the king of Syria, "he said, 'Go and spy where he is,'" Elisha is, "'that I may send and fetch him.' And it was told him, saying, 'Behold, he's in Dothan.'" Verse 14, "Therefore send he thither horses and chariots and a great host, and they came by night and compassed the city about." This king of Syria is wanting to capture Elisha and carry him away captive to his ultimate death. Verse 15, "And when the servant of the man of God," this is Elisha's servant, "was risen early," got up early in the morning, and he went outside and he took a look around, "behold, a host compassed the city, both with horses and chariots." Okay, these are the bad guys. These are the forces of the king of Assyria. "And his servant said unto him, 'Alas, my master, you know, we're done in. It's all over with. We're completely surrounded. They've captured us. What shall we do? How will we escape? We're totally surrounded by the bad guys. We can't escape.'" So he was panicky. But Elisha was a great man of faith and understanding, and Elisha was not worried, not one bit. Verse 16, "And Elisha answered, 'Fear not, don't get in a panic.'" And then here's the revelation to us, brethren, "For they that be with us," now he's speaking about the angelic host, the unseen angelic spirit beings, "they that are with us are more than they that be with them." So he reveals here in verse 16, 2 Kings 6 and verse 16, there are two forces out there. There are the angelic forces, extremely powerful, outnumbering the evil forces that are also unseen, who are the motivation for the king of Syria's forces. So there's this great standoff out there, this stalemate, because the angels of righteousness and good are far superior to the evil spirits. Elisha knew that they were protected by a heavenly host of angels, but Elisha's servant was totally oblivious to the angelic army. Verse 17, "And Elisha prayed and said, 'Lord, I pray thee, open my servant's eyes that he might see.' And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha." So they were completely protected by these angelic forces that Elisha didn't need to see. He knew they were there. So the king of Syria stood down for the moment, but he regained his composure after a while, and he mounts up another attack. If you turn over to chapter 7, the Syrian forces flee at the sound of the heavenly host of the angelic chariots in action. They just had to hear them. They didn't see them. This is 2 Kings 7 and verse 6. "For the Lord made the host of the Syrians to hear a noise of chariots, and a noise of horses, and the noise of a great host." So we see God reveals to us many things about the spirit world, but God's good angels, God's spirit world is in control, is ruling, and has the upper hand always. And we, brethren, always have the upper hand. We do not delve into the occult, in the demonic. Did you know that Halloween has not always been customary in America as it has become so prevalent today? No, it's rather new. Our founding fathers in America refused to permit Halloween because they knew it was a pagan holiday. And the Puritans of New England, they maintained a strong opposition against Halloween because they knew it was based on demonic precepts and practices. Brethren, we have come to the point where America is crashing. We have lost control of our government. We have lost control of our morals. We've lost control of our finances. We've lost control of our senses. Maybe, just maybe, the tide of America's grandeur has begun to ebb, to go out like the tide when we lost our way and when we first began to speak those words, trick or treat, because this nation before that was a godly nation. But now, we're dabbling in the occult. Let's go over to Micah chapter 5. There's a television program, brethren. Maybe you've heard about it. I didn't hear about it until just recently. It's called The Walking Dead, and it's a graphic, scary, zombie-filled TV series. It's a horror drama, and it pictures a world dominated by flesh-eating zombies. It's been running for 3 years, and it's got the highest ratings for a television series. I hadn't even heard about it. Now, it's up for a fourth season with 16 episodes coming. And when it was announced that there was a fourth season, that's when I heard about it for the first time. It's got over 16 million viewers that are just enthralled and love to watch this trash on TV. It's number one in our country. Does that tell you what the mind of America is on? Where does the impetus for this horror come from? It's ungodly. Shades of the Tribulation. It features predators, walking as zombies that go around devouring every living thing they can catch. The people at every turn are faced with horror of these walking zombies. One lady in the church wrote to me and she says, "I am just shocked that God's people dare to even justify watching demonic television shows and movies." Yes, brethren, one of the reasons I'm bringing this message is because it is in God's church. This Harry Potter business, this demonic business, like this Walking Dead, you know, all of these horrible shows, they should not go into our mind, because once you get them in your mind, you can't get them out of your mind. The people who look at these things say, "Oh, it's an innocent form of escapism." Escapism is the tendency to seek distraction and relief from unpleasant realities, especially by seeking entertainment or engaging in fantasy. So the question comes up, is it okay to look at this kind of trash on television as a form of escapism? Watching man-eating zombies is escapism. But brethren, it's escapism from morality and sensitivity. And it leads to an acceptance of sinful and unnatural behavior. You fool with it long enough, you start to think it's okay. You start to think it doesn't hurt anything. It doesn't matter. What does God say about delving into these practices as a form of escapism? Is God going to allow the occult in the millennium, for example? We read in Micah chapter 5 and verse 12, God says, "I will cut off witchcrafts out of your hand, and you shall no more have soothsayers. Your graven images also will I cut off, and your standing images out of the midst of you, and you shall no more worship the work of your hands." Verse 14, "I will pluck up the groves." That's the place where they went for this demonic worship. "I will pluck up the groves out of the midst of you, so will I destroy your cities." See, it sounds like what we started off there in Revelation about all the sorceries causing the demise of our country. Is Halloween merely innocent merrymaking or a celebration of the dark side, the sinister forces of the occult powers that exist on earth? What's the truth of this fascinating holiday and people's captivation by it? Where did it come from? We know that God's people should not celebrate it today. Take a good look at the present day celebration of Halloween. The whole theme of Halloween is one of darkness, death, fear, and threats, and destruction, and evil. Oh, I know it's been painted over with a pretty brush. It's been painted over to make it so acceptable, make it nice, make it fun, make it undangerous. Brethren, let me get you to make a list of the symbols of Halloween. I did. And I was surprised when I began to make a list. I was astounded at how long the list had become. Here's a list of the things that comprise the symbols for Halloween. There are grotesque witches with warts and stringy hair and pointy hats with long black capes and their own broomsticks. And there are black cats with their backs arched high. There are bats. There are owls. There are ghouls, there are gargoyles, there are goblins, ghosts, skeletons, and death everywhere. Jack-o'-lanterns, zombies, boiling cauldrons with poisonous portions, frightening masks, spider webs, black widow spiders, dripping candles, even omens, spooks, graves, and coffins, and tombstones. All of these eerie sights are symbols of death. Death. In some genres, you see misshapen hunchbacks and grossly deformed characters, monsters. It's also a day of orange, black, and red candy, the devil's colors, bobbing for apples in a tub of water, visiting haunted houses, playing pranks, telling scary stories, watching horror films, fortune telling. The grotesque list goes on and on. Halloween is the highest day in Wiccan, W-I-C-C-A-N. That's a modern pagan religion. It's a practice of witchcraft. It's the witchcraft religion of today. October the 31st is the most important day in their year, their satanic year, their false religious year. On Halloween, for many centuries, witches, these are live people, live women with evil powers, would work out their magic and then have wild parties throughout the darkness of the night. But we're supposed to think today, brethren, oh, think of it as light-hearted, jovial, fun-loving activity. You know, brethren, it has crept in to us through the deception of Satan to be totally innocuous. At Halloween, people dress up their children as demons and witches and ghouls and monsters and werewolves and send them out into the street into the darkness to trick or treat. But where did that custom come from? At Halloween, there are parties where people masquerade and dress up in bizarre costumes like freaks and weird figures. There's divination. There are seances, Ouija boards, in the name of fun and excitement. Boys dress up like their comic book heroes, like Spider-Man. Little girls sometimes dress up like ladies of the night, thinking, ha, 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 this is so cute, something they would never do, right? But does it lessen the natural boundary, the God-given boundary, the God-given protective instincts that God puts in a child, the boundaries between moral conduct and the reality of temptations that come later in adulthood? It breaks you down. It makes it acceptable to practice all of these accoutrements of Halloween. Halloween is rooted in paganism. It grew out of a celebration marking the onset of winter's gloom. Halloween comes at that time of the year when things do start to die off, like the leaves begin to fall out of the trees. And it's getting more and more popular. Have you noticed that in some neighborhoods, they decorate for Halloween like they do for Christmas? It's only second to Christmas in popularity, and it seems to be intensifying every year. Halloween is not new. In fact, it's older than Christianity, having been celebrated well back into pagan past history. The ancient Druids of England and Europe celebrated this pseudo-fall festival at this time of the year, about the 8th month of the year on God's sacred calendar. But it was not to God, it was to the sun god. These Druids, who were ancient men witches, false priests, they built huge New Year's bonfires of oak branches, which they considered sacred. And it spread throughout the English Isles up to Ireland and Scotland. And then when those Irish and Scotch immigrated to the United States in the 19th century, they brought that Druid influence to North America. And millions of Europeans also, when they immigrated to America, they carried along their traditions. Halloween comes after the harvest season, at the beginning of winter, in that darker half of the year. This ritual of Halloween is tied to the seasonal cycles of life and death as the last crops were harvested and livestock were rounded up for the winter slaughter. So it falls after God's Feast of Tabernacles, but it plays on some of those same thoughts. And the barrier between the world of the living and the dead is thought to be broached on Halloween, this fascination with death. The Pope got involved early in the 7th century and began to honor all of the saints and martyrs and all of that nonsense between the religion and faith of Simon Magus. We'll see him in just a minute. It came together. It's hard to trace Halloween back exactly because paganism likes to borrow from this one and add from that one, but it is deeply rooted in myths, ancient stories, supposedly explaining the seasons and the mysteries of life and death. But brethren, it is not of God. I'd like, in the time that we have remaining, let's go through the Word of God and see what God Himself says about this evil spirit realm. I think a lot of people in God's church don't realize that the Bible is replete. It has so many examples of what is going on in this spirit world that God says is wrong. Leave it alone. It's an abomination. Don't have anything to do with it. And here we are in America today calling it Halloween. Ha, ha, ha. You know, so much fun for everybody. That we take our children and our grandchildren and dress them up like little monsters or like little beauty queens and send them out, you know, to start delving in the occult. Let's go into some scriptures. Let's go to Leviticus 19. I'll try to keep them somewhat in chronological order so you won't be flipping back and forth too much, but I would like you to follow along in your Bible as much as you can and look at what God is saying about these occult symbols and this practice of witchcraft and this dabbling with the demons and so forth. The Bible is full, full of warnings not to even think about fooling with Halloween and all that it symbolizes. Leviticus 19, let's begin with a command from God not to have anything to do at all with witchcraft. Leviticus 19 and verse 31. Regard them not that have familiar spirits. Okay, brethren, here's another term that we're going to see a lot of times as we go through the scriptures. The King James translators translated it as familiar spirits. This is a term that the Bible uses for soothsaying, fortune telling, magic spells, wizardry, sorcery, the occult, and so forth. Regard not them that have familiar spirits. Neither seek after wizards, God says, to be defiled by them. That's exactly what it does. You fool with that stuff, you are defiled by it. You become unclean. I am the Lord your God. Listen to me, is what God is saying. In other words, God says, he's saying that we're not to have anything to do with mediums or necromancers. That's a word that pops up in the King James. A necromancer is a wizard that deals in black magic or a sorcerer. You can picture them in the Harry Potter kind of stories, these witches with the tall, for some reason they have these long, tall, spiked caps with stars and moons and all that kind of nonsense. But that's called necromancers. Do not seek them out, and so make yourselves unclean by them. I am the Lord your God. That's what that verse is saying. The presence of a medium or an evil spiritism among God's people, the people of Israel, God considered that as a defilement. All these practices, these demonic practices, take people farther from their Creator. That takes them away from the true and the living God in His ways. That is why America is failing. We have left off the principles of give and hard work and keeping your word and honesty and liberty and freedom and justice and honor and all of those kind of things. Those have been robbed because of this dabbling into the spirit world and becoming like demons with their evil, selfish, greedy types of motivations. That's what drives them. I'll get mine. I'll take mine. I won't work for it. I'll fight. I'll be mean. I'll get even. Those are all of Satan, and that's what drives our country today into the grave as we're headed into it. Leviticus 20 and verse 6, just a page over, brethren. We'll see what happens if you do engage in these things, because the Bible says anyone that does them is detestable to the Lord. Leviticus 20 and verse 6. And the soul that turns after such, these familiar spirits, these demons and magic spells and wizards, and the soul that turns after such as have familiar spirits, the sorcery, and after wizards to go whoring after them, that's a relationship that is not a right relationship with God, I will set my face against that person and I'll cut him off from among his people. God says, you're out of here if you do that sort of thing. And he means you're going to take yourself out. You know, God doesn't come out and flip people over on their head and say, okay, you're out of here. No, they take themselves right out. They go into wrongful, immoral living and things that make them go broke, make them go wild, make them go crazy, make them go into addiction, those kind of things. So God's telling us, how does God deal with witchcraft and sorcery? Leviticus 20 and verse 27. A man also, or a woman, that has a familiar spirit, that's this evil spirits and witchcraft, or that's a wizard, shall be put to death. You shall stone them with stones. Their blood shall be upon you. Do we do that today? No. We put them on the talk show. And a lot of these witches today are beautiful, alluring women. And they talk about it in such glowing terms. Everybody goes, oh, that can't be bad. Isn't that cute? I'll look into it some more. Why is it wrong? Brethren, it's because they destroy the soul and the morality of a nation. That's what God's telling us. This is a horrendous thing. We are not to look to omens or signs to direct our lives. The Bible reprimands people for doing just such as that. God calls it an abomination. It's foolishness. Turn over to Deuteronomy. We're going to kind of go fast through the rest of the Bible here, brethren. Deuteronomy 18 and verse 9. And I'm not touching on all of them by any means. Just some that can pinpoint what God says about this spirit world that we're to leave alone. Deuteronomy 18 and verse 9. When you come into the land which the Lord your God gives you. Now that wasn't just the promised land. This is speaking about America. This is the way the land of America should be. You shall not learn, God says, to do after the abominations of those nations, as we saw a while ago, Haiti and the Dominican Republic and the Caribbean and the African nations and the places that have brought up the voodoo and all the evil spirits and the ones in Europe that have brought over all of this business about Halloween. Verse 10, there shall not be found among you anyone that makes his son or daughter to pass through the fire. This is the ancient practice of abortion, passing the newborn child through the fire, or that practices, uses divination, or an observer of times. God calls these demonic practices by different names. He calls them familiar spirits, uses divination, observers of time. This is fortune telling by stargazing, using astrology, not astronomy, but astrology, or an enchanter, or a witch. God says all of these different titles these demonic personages have. Astrology, brethren, let me explain that. Our lives are not guided by the stars or the movement of planets. That's astrology, not astronomy, which is the study of, you know, deep space and planetary bodies and stars and such as that. Deuteronomy 18, verse 11. Or, he continues, a charmer. Okay, what is that? That's someone who casts spells or puts curses on things, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. That's a wizard that deals in black magic or sorcery. None of the black arts. None of the black arts are to be dealt with, God says. Verse 12, for all that do these things are an abomination unto the Lord, and because of these abominations, the Lord your God doth drive them out from before you. Okay, we're about to be driven out of this nation. God's going to spew Americans out of America because of this witchcraft and what witchcraft has ultimately done in completely degrading the morality of this nation. Verse 13, you shall be perfect with the Lord your God. Verse 14, Deuteronomy 18, verse 14. For these nations which you shall possess hearkened unto observers of times and unto diviners. But as for you, the Lord your God hath not allowed you to do so. Yeah, you might have come from Egypt or any of those places that used to get into that stuff, but don't have anything to do with it anymore. Let's go over to 1 Samuel chapter 28, just flipping back. Brethren, in our nation, you may have noticed, and I've noticed it going back many years in the White House, it's commonplace for presidents and court justices in Washington, D.C., the elite of Washington, D.C., to seek out soothsayers and mediums and seances, to have their futures told or to contact those who once were alive and are now dead. It was exactly the same with King Saul of Israel. He wanted to get in contact with those dead people. And it's strange that Saul had earlier driven out all the necromancers and the magicians of Israel, but now he wants to get in touch with one as we come to 1 Samuel 28. Then said Saul unto his servants, seek me a woman that has a familiar spirit. I mean, he purposely said, I want to know what's going on, and they have the answers. So you see, it was commonplace way back then, just like it is today. This is tall King Saul. And he wants a witch. He wants her to come that he might inquire of her, it says in verse 7. And his servants said to him, behold, there is a woman that has a familiar spirit. There's a witch over in Endor. This is the witch at Endor that people are enthralled with. And God says, don't be enthralled with this. And so, you know, what happened to Saul, he lost the kingdom, he lost his job, he lost everything, lost the country. Let's go over to 2 Chronicles 33, just speeding through a few of these, brethren, just trying to get in as many as we can. Here's a picture of our national leadership and our nation today, even though it's way back in 2 Chronicles chapter 33. This has to do with evil King Manasseh. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, like unto the abominations of the heathen. Exactly what God said, don't do. He went and dabbled in it and said, okay, I'll do it. You know, he got out the Ouija board. He got out the curses and the potions and the all the magic powders and ointments and a magic potion and all of those kind of things. And he dealt with those people that trafficked in that kind of stuff, whom the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. We read in 2 Chronicles 33 and verse 6, and King Manasseh caused his children to pass through the fire in the valley of the son of Hinnom. That's the abortion and the child sacrifice. Also, he observed times. That means that he was into astrology, this fortune telling. And he used enchantments. That's magic spells with omens and sorceries. And he used witchcraft, and he dealt with a familiar spirit and with wizards, and he wrought much evil. Notice that. He worked a great deal of evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. Yes, you do that kind of stuff and you destroy the nation, just like our nation has been destroyed, brethren. We're just walking right down the same putrid path. Verse 7, 2 Chronicles 33 and verse 7. And he set a carved image, the idol which he had made, in the house of God. How horrible. That's what we see in America. We've taken God out of everything. We've taken the commandments out of everything, out of the Supreme Court, out of our schools. That's exactly what was going on. You want to know what's going to happen to America shortly? Go back and look at what happened to the nation of Israel. Go back and look at what happened to the nation of Judah. They were carried into captivity. Their nations were split. They were carried asunder. That's exactly where we're going. 2 Kings chapter 9. Don't turn there, brethren. I'll just give you one point. In verse 22, you can read that evil Queen Jezebel, she practiced witchcraft, and she brought catastrophe upon herself and all of Israel. Over and over, God denounces those who conjure up spells and those who practice witchcraft and sorcery. Turn over to 2 Kings 23. But people say, you know what they say, brethren? Oh, I'm not doing that with Halloween. I'm not getting mixed up with that. I don't want to have a part of that. All we're going to do is let the kiddies get a couple of candy bars and have some fun with their friends, and it is harmless. Well, King Manasseh, Queen Jezebel, King Saul, they always thought it was harmless. And look at where they ended up. We are headed to the same place. God wrote these things down as examples to us upon whom the end times have come, brethren. Okay, let's go to King Josiah. This is good King Josiah. He did something about the witchcraft. For once, we could have somebody stand up. We could have a person with character stand up in this nation. Pray, brethren, that someone in this nation stands up to the evil powers that are controlling things. Ask God to knock down the evil powers, destroy them, bring them to ruin, and set up a good king like King Josiah. 2 Kings 23. And verse 23. But in the 18th year of King Josiah, wherein this great Passover was held to the Lord in Jerusalem, that's what Josiah did. Verse 24. Moreover, the workers with familiar spirits, that's those mediums and necromancers, and the wizards, and the images, that's those statues of household gods, and the idols, and all the abominations that were spied in the land of Judah and Jerusalem, did Josiah put away. He cleaned up the country. Can you imagine America cleaned up like that to where God's name was holy once again and the commandments were sacred to everyone, and we got rid of things like Halloween, we got rid of Christmas and Easter, and we did things in a godly way. That's what Josiah was doing, that he might perform the works of the law which were written in the book that Hilkiah the priest found in the house of the Lord. Went over there and Tanan, right there in the temple, found the book with all the good words in it. Turn over to Isaiah chapter 8, brethren. This obsession with the dead and with their spirits, it's not a new thing at all. It is found in all the ancient pagan customs that Israel came into contact with. All of them had this evil business going on. Brethren, it has come to America through association and contact with heathen peoples. Isaiah 8 and verse 19. And when they shall say unto you, seek them that have familiar spirits, these mediums and these necromancers, and unto the wizards that peep and chirp and mutter. That has to do with all this funny sounds that they make when they call in the spirits, like they're in communication with the dead. These people that are led by demons and so forth. And they're not in contact with the dead, I might add, because the dead are dead and they have no thoughts. It is all demonic. If anything's coming back, it's coming back from demons, not from the dead. And so we're told, look for them, seek them, these things that mutter and peep in the night. Should not a people seek to their God? Yes, we should seek to their God. Should they inquire of the dead on behalf of the living? No. He's talking about seances right there. Inquiring of the dead, just like Saul did. Isaiah 19, turn over a few pages. Remember how Egypt was full of idolatry and evil magicians and sorcerers who gave counsel to the Pharaohs? We read in Isaiah 19 and verse 3, and the spirit of Egypt shall fail, shall be emptied out, in other words, in the midst thereof, and I will confound their counsel, and they shall seek to the idols, and to the charmers, that's the sorcerers, and to them that have familiar spirits, that's the mediums and the necromancers, and to the wizards. See, that's what the evil do, but not God's people. And Americans shouldn't be doing that. We should have outlawed Halloween way back when the founding fathers stood against it and said never, you know, have demonic practices in America. But we have polluted our soil. America has been polluted. Let's go over to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel is the prophet that had to deal with witchcraft in his day. And we hardly recognize it today. If you went around, in fact, this message is not going to be widely received. Most people think that's a bunch of nonsense. It absolutely makes no difference to put up some orange lights and some spider webs and some tombstones in my front yard and scatter some bones about and so forth. It's just silly fun, and we'll pick it up the day after and we'll do it again next year. There's no problem. That's where we're at in America. But Daniel realized that it was evil. And let's just read here in Daniel chapter 2 to see if he recognized its existence back then, and can we recognize it, the existence of these demonic forces today. Daniel 2 and verse 27, Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king has dreamed, cannot the wise men, that's those who deal in the black arts, the magic stuff, the astrologers, the enchanters, the magicians and the soothsayers, show the answer to the king? See, this was a fact of life in Daniel's day. We'll see in a moment that it's a fact of life in the apostles' day as well. And brethren, it's a fact of life today for you and I, but who recognizes it as such? Nahum. Nahum is a little book we don't turn to very often. It's right after the book of Micah. This verse is prophetic in nature. It's talking about the end time, and it shows what we're dealing with today and how God regards it. Nahum chapter 3 and verse 4. Because of the multitude of the whoredoms of the well-favored harlot, the mistress of witchcrafts. So right now, today, there are mistresses of witchcraft. These are women that deal in sorcery, in churches that deal in sorcery, that selleth nations through her whoredoms. You know, we're sold down the tubes is what we're sold, brethren. And families through her witchcraft. Yes, families are destroyed as well. Let's go to the New Testament, brethren. Acts chapter 8. We're going to see that the church of God in the New Testament was also plagued, just as we are today. Acts 8 and verse 9. There was a certain man called Simon. We know him as Simon the sorcerer, which before time in the same city used sorcery. That's black magic. And he could work some very terrible things using black magic. It was real magic, had real power, and bewitched the people of Samaria, giving out that he was some great one. Yeah, Simon the sorcerer used his contact with the demonic world, putting curses on people and sicknesses and all of that kind of thing, to catapult himself to the head of the false religious system, the same system that has become the Roman Catholic Church today. Turn over to Acts chapter 16. I'd like you to turn over with me to Acts 16. I'm going to read an extended little segment here because it's a beautiful story that I want you to see that God is not hamstrung because of demonic forces. There are demonic forces. We deal with them, but we don't dabble in them, brethren. Seeking the counsel of evil spirits has all become a part of everyday life today. It has become acceptable in our country. In California, when a child goes missing, they call for the witches and the soothsayers with the crystal balls, who sometimes, not unsurprisingly, have connections to the demonic world to find somebody that's lost, to, you know, come up with the clues and so forth. Now, back in the New Testament time, dealing with one of these witches got the apostle Paul and Silas thrown into jail. You say, well, what was he doing dealing with them? Well, let's look at the story and see what happened. Acts 16 and verse 16. And it came to pass as we went to prayer. So Paul is close to God and praying. A certain damsel, that sounds tame enough. What we have here is a slave girl who was a witch and she had evil magic powers. We'll see that. But a certain damsel with these magic powers, possessed with a spirit, that's an evil spirit, of divination, met us, which brought her masters much gain by soothsaying. So you can picture almost like a harlot standing on the street that has a pimp that sells her services. She had a master or masters that were getting rich off of her. And she could tell the future. She could find missing people, all kind of things like that. Okay, the brethren, there's an important lesson here that I don't want us to miss. Those who are possessed of evil spirits easily recognize the children of God, those who possess God's Holy Spirit. Those demonic people recognize us when we have God's Holy Spirit. And there's an example right here. Notice in verse 17, the same, this witch girl that followed Paul and us, this is Luke writing this down, and he's talking about Silas and Paul and so forth. She cried saying, "These men are the servants of the Most High God." How did she know that? How did this slave girl with the witch powers, how did she know that Paul and Silas were the servants of the Most High God, which show unto us the way of salvation? She's mocking, she's mimicking, but she's telling the truth. Demons tell the truth sometimes. This sorcerer girl, she's probably in her late teens because of the way she's described. She latched on to Paul and the company, and she tormented them wherever they went. They couldn't shake loose of her. Verse 18, "And this did she many days, but Paul, being grieved, turned unto the evil spirit." And he says, "I command you in the name of Jesus Christ." He's not talking to the girl. He's talking to the evil spirit. He knew she had a possessed spirit in her. He said to the evil spirit, "I command you in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her." And in the same hour, that means instantly, that demon came out of that damsel, that slave girl. Okay, you'd think, okay, that's the end of the story. But, brethren, here, these pimps who were making a good living off of her, they're suddenly out of business. She couldn't work her evil charms anymore. Verse 19, "And when her master saw that the hope of their gains was gone," they just lost their income, "they caught Paul and Silas and they threw them in the marketplace under the rulers." See, the pimps accused Paul and Silas of being the troublemakers. Brethren, here's a truism. Whenever you stand up for God's way, it is you who will be labeled the troublemaker. Not the troublemaker. We have that in the church a lot today. Verse 20, "And they brought them to the magistrate, saying, 'These men, being Jews, do exceedingly trouble your city.'" They're big troublemakers. Verse 21, "And they teach customs which aren't lawful to receive, neither observe, being Romans." We can't go along with what they're doing. Verse 22, "And the multitude rose up together against them," against Paul and Silas, "and the magistrates tore their clothes off and commanded that Paul and Silas be beaten Just like Jesus Christ was beaten. That'll solve everything. Just beat the tar out of them. Verse 23. And when they had laid many stripes on them, they cast them into prison, charging the jailer to keep them safely. In other words, they were thrown into solitary confinement. Verse 24. This jailer, having received such a charge, he put them in the inner prison, solitary confinement. And he made their feast fast in the stock. These guys are not getting away. Okay, so it's not going good for Paul and Silas. Is God out of the picture? No. God is working. When things don't seem to be going our way, you know, and the demons have the upper hand and the bad guys are winning and they're calling you a troublemaker and everything, brethren, stop and think. God's in charge. God's working out some greater good. What greater good could possibly come out of this, you might ask? Verse 25. And at midnight, Paul and Silas were praying. There they are in jail, praying to God, singing praises unto God. And the prisoners heard them. You know, it's like, if these guys lost their mind, here they are with their arms, their hands, their heads in stocks, in solitary confinement, and they're singing some of the hymns like we sing in our book today, verse 26. And suddenly there was a great earthquake so that the foundation of the prison were shaken, and immediately the doors were open, and everyone's hands and bands and shackles and everything was loosed. And the keeper of the prison, waking out of his sleep and seeing the prison doors open, he pulled out his sword. He was going to commit hara-kiri. He goes, okay, my job, I got to be responsible for this. You know, I'm in big, big trouble. You know, even earthquakes aren't an excuse with the Romans. And so he's about to kill himself, and he would have killed himself, supposing that the prisoners had fled. But Paul cried with a loud voice saying, don't kill yourself. Don't do yourself any harm. We're here. We're still here. Now, brethren, what a marvelous way to call this jailer and his family to conversion. So when we do it God's way, all good works out. When we follow the world's way, you know, our country goes to the dogs. Verse 33. And Paul took them that same hour of the night, and he washed their stripes, and he was baptized. He and all of his family straight away. Let's go over to Acts 19. Just a few more verses, brethren, then we'll close. One thing that we don't often consider is how prevalent witchcraft was in the first century church. In all of that culture and coming into the church. I thought this was astounding. Acts 19 and verse 19. And many that believed, these are people that came into the church and were baptized, and they're new converts in the church. Many that believed came, and they confessed, and they showed their deeds. And many of them also, which used curious arts, see, they had been fooling around in this black magic as well. They brought their books together, and they burned them. They had these magic books, and these curses books, and these poultices books, and all of these books. They brought them together and they burned them before all the men. Just set them on fire, made a big fire. Paper and parchment burns real good. And they counted the price of them and found it to be 50,000 pieces of silver. That's like saying it wasn't just one or two books. We had an entire library on pagan occultism and witchcraft that these people had practiced before they came into God's church. That took its toll on these people. Let's go over to Galatians chapter 5, brethren. There was plenty of Halloween-type activity in the culture back then. And so Paul writes to the Galatians in verse 5, now the works of the flesh are manifest, and these... Now, brethren, there's a warning for God's people not to get involved at all. Totally stay clear of it. Eschew the occult. Stay away from it. Notice verse 20. It mentions idolatry and witchcraft and then some of the things that go along with it. Hatred and fits of anger and everything. Just like we saw in the Old Testament, all this idolatry and witchcraft. Brethren, let's close by going to the book of Revelation. Right now, God is sorting out who will be with him and who it is that is going to be destroyed. Revelation 21 and verse 7. God says, he that overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. Verse 8. But the fearful, that's the cowardly, and the unbelieving, that's those without faith, and the abominable, and the murderers, and the whoremongers, those who are sexually immoral, and the sorcerers, and the idolaters. Brethren, God is saying this to the church. Don't have anything to do with Halloween. Don't have anything to do with the occult. Don't have anything to do with the demons. Fast and pray. Turn from those things. Turn to the living God. All of these liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. It says in Revelation 22 and verse 15, for without, not a part of God's church, but outside, there are dogs and sorcerers, those who practice witchcraft, and whoremongers, and murderers, and idolaters, and whosoever loves a lie and tells a lie. Brethren, it is so clear from the scriptures. God says, don't have anything to do with Halloween. The practices of Halloween will bring a nation to its knees and destroy a nation because of what it teaches. Extortion, immorality, lies, looking to demons, looking to selfishness, and all the terrible traits that are associated with Halloween. Brethren, have nothing to do with it. Brethren, do not believe the lie.